Sherry Knewston.
Blog Talk Radio.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. President Biden is in Brussels for the first summit of NATO leaders in 2 years. Lucy Huff has more from Brussels.
The new U.S. leader is expected to reassure NATO allies of America's commitment to collective defense. On Sunday, the White House issued a statement setting out what the NATO summit will aim to achieve. There'll be a new strategic concept designed to renew the approach to challenges from Russia and China, as well as transnational threats from terrorism, cyber threats, and climate change.
The coronavirus situation in Germany continues to show signs of improvement, as 8 regions are reporting 0 cases today. From Berlin, Trent Murray reports.
In most other areas, infection levels are also now low enough for contact tracers to quickly identify and contain fresh outbreaks. The health minister has said he expects mask mandates to soon be lifted. The falling infection levels are being attributed largely to the country's vaccine rollout. 49% of the German population has now received at least one dose, while 26.5% are fully protected with both jabs.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott is promising to release details this week on how the state plans to build more border wall. Monica Weisberg-Stewart with the Texas Border Coalition says the wall will not do what the governor thinks it will do.
Until the federal government fixes our immigration system, the governor building a wall is not going to stop the people from coming.
She says the wall will not stop the flow of drugs either. Studies reveal most narcotics come through the ports. Wasabi is this year's Best in Show at the 145th Annual Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. The 3-year-old Pekingese from Pennsylvania took top honors Sunday, beating out 2,500 other dogs in the popular competition. The Westminster Dog Show has long been held in wintertime at New York's Madison Square Garden, but due to the COVID pandemic, it was relocated to a country estate in New York in Westchester County. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hi, break time? I know you. I'm Cologuard, a prescription colon cancer screening option for people 45 plus at average risk. It seems like you take care of yourself.
I do. I play tennis. I try to eat well.
What about screening for colon cancer?
Not yet.
Don't wait. Colon cancer is more treatable when it's caught in early stages.
Tell me more.
Cologuard is non-invasive and is used at home. It detects altered DNA in your stool to find 92% of colon cancers.
92%?
Yep, even those in early stages.
This was seen in a clinical study with patients 50 and older. Any positive results should be followed by a diagnostic colonoscopy. False positive and negative results may occur. Cologuard is not a replacement for colonoscopy in high-risk patients. Do not use if you have had adenomas, have inflammatory bowel disease and certain hereditary syndromes, or a personal or family history of colon cancer.
Most insured patients pay $0. Ask your provider or an online prescriber if Cologuard is right for you, or visit requestcologuard.com.
I'm on it.
Excellent.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for alternative clouds. Weather outlook for Monday. We'll see areas of morning patchy fog making way to mostly cloudy skies and light rain showers on and off throughout the day today. The temperatures around 68, 69 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies and light rain showers again at times. Low temperatures dropping down to about 55. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers. A few thunderstorms mixed in the afternoon. High temperatures around 66, 67. Those clouds and showers will part by Tuesday night. Low temperatures dropping down to about 53. For Wednesday, mostly sunny skies. High temperatures around 70.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore living the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knudsen, and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Are your thoughts keeping you small? Are you ready to get big? I will offer you ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. Explore what is keeping you small and how to shift your behaviors in order to get big. Learn what is possible for you. Get ready to get big and live life out loud starting now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's so great to be talking to all of you. We've got a great show. And by the way, one of the things I love is getting on a call like this, a show like this, and talking to somebody that lives and breathes the content. Carrie Knudsen joining me here today. Knudsen speaks, and, you know, you've heard a bit about what she does in her life, in her business, in her coaching platform. But more importantly, it's what her message is. You know, when we're talking about emotions, and now we're looking at emotional intelligence, and some of the really cool research coming out now about emotional intelligence and human development is just profoundly groundbreaking. And I want to give you an example later on in the show, but when you think about, you know, Carrie, and you think about being a professional speaker, making it through COVID, both of us, you know, the people that go out and, like, get on a stage and, like, hey, everybody, and do, like, talk, and then we didn't. Then just, like, it didn't happen. But something else happened. Something else changed. And that's part of the conversation today with Carrie. When you think about being in a place where you can't move, there's a word that I have been Googling, 2003, Benny, since 2003. And why did I Google the word stuck or stuckness? You know, what is it about being stuck that hit me so hard in 2003 that the show was called Crust Busting Your Way to an Awesome Life? It was all about being crusty and stuck and just not doing anything. Today, Carrie is bringing it. How do you get big out loud with Carrie? How do you do that? How do you live the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life now and talk about the complexity of being stuck? This is what we're fired up about today. Carrie, great to have you, right? We're fired up about this, no?
Yes, I'm so excited, especially because your work in crust busting totally aligns with my topic this month of being stuck. And that whole idea, I like how all of us call it different things, like your idea of being like a crustiness and being stuck. I love that like metaphor and how that really resonates with sometimes how it feels to be stuck. And
like me.
Is that how you were feeling?
That was me back in 2001, 2002, 2003. So let's talk about this for a minute, because this idea of stuckness and emotional intelligence is a really profoundly powerful body of work. You know, when we talk about stuckness, a lot of the times Benny would say, back in the day, we didn't include emotions.
No.
We just were like, oh, I'm stuck. I can't move.
Well, you're just supposed to get over it and not really process it. Just figure it out. Don't process it. And you don't really talk about emotions. I mean, even now, a lot of people have a hard time talking about emotions.
You think? Especially now. And let me ask you this question to get us rolling here. We are in a place now where we've never been, really, that I can remember. I'm sure we've been here before. But when I think about a world being at this place where we have been stuck for, mm-hmm. what, 18 months, some places more than that, mm-hmm. and now we're given a green light to be unstuck. Mm-hmm. But there's no outlet for emotion. And so can you talk about what it means to admit that we're experiencing something?
Yes, well, exactly. That's such a key thing. And what you're saying is emotional intelligence is all around optimizing your expression of your own emotions, right? So when you're talking about that's a big thing. Emotional intelligence really touches on the ability for you to have some self-awareness about what's going on with you, name the feelings, and then optimize your expression of them. And that simply means for any given moment or how you feel, like how do you utilize your emotions to help you move forward and to get through things. And when you think about the idea of being stuck, what you said, it's like we have literally and figuratively been stuck because of the pandemic. And some of us are fearing like the transition back a little bit too, weird, because being stuck by the pandemic was an external force that forced us to be stuck, right? It's an external force. But a lot of times there's other things going on with us, even concurrently, where we it's a self-induced stuck. We don't know what to do. We're confused, right? And so now we're coming out of the enforced stuck, the external stuck, and also we might be grappling with our own feelings, like, how do I process what I just went through in the pandemic? How do I, like, restart my life again? How do I make some decisions when I kind of don't know still about how the future's going to look? And so I think all these things are so important to discuss, and the root of them all, the root of how we start to do that, everyone kind of wants to get to the solution quick, like, oh, tell me what to do or how to figure it out. But the real place to start is identifying what you're feeling. And that idea of identifying feelings is at the crux of emotional intelligence. It's one of the big pieces of, like, identifying your feelings helps the feelings not only get validated, like, oh, this is how I feel, but then you could also move through them. So, for example, sometimes if we say in our society, we tend to say things like, I can either be happy, mad, sad, or good, or busy. Those are maybe my options, right? If you ever feel that way, those are like how we express ourselves. And I call those really like level one feelings. Like they're just kind of like, meh, right? That's kind of how you feel. And really, when we're sad or even angry, that could actually, when we think about a word that really describes how we feel, overwhelmed, depressed, anxious, frustrated, devastated, like finding like really rich words to say how we, like maybe you say I'm angry, like are you angry or are you disappointed? Like yeah. See how different those words are? But yeah. Sometimes we like throw everything in the bucket of anger and then we don't really take time to identify. And so some of us even have a hard time saying, I'm feeling stuck. I'm feeling like I don't know what to do. And the idea of naming it first for what it is can sometimes be an access point to then moving through it. Instead of if you stay at level one, where you're kind of like, I don't know, I just kind of whatever, getting through it, or I don't have time to feel my feelings, or I don't even know what, growing up, I was just supposed to get through it. Like a lot of us
suck it up. You're supposed to suck it up.
Yeah, suck it up, get through it.
Just get through it. Don't ask any questions. Don't stop whining.
Yeah.
Right? I remember we used to give out these little pins at the phone company, and it would say no whining. I mean, that's a perfect example of a corporate culture where you have to. They used to say you have to leave your personal issues at the door, but you come into work and you may have issues too. So I love the way you're describing this. How are you feeling today, Carrie?
Yeah. Oh, I'm feeling. I have to say, I'm feeling hopeful. And excited, and I'm feeling, I've had this kind of anticipatory, like nervous excitement, almost because the summer is opening up, and I'm feeling like kind of hopeful. And I have to say, I'm also feeling joyful because some of my flowers bloomed in my front yard, and they're showing off today. And I just got to water them and just experience this. You know, when you have just a moment of pure joy from something like a flower or a moment, and I just was like, oh, I just had this feeling of hopefulness. And my flowers bloomed, and I felt very hopeful. How about you?
Well, I think that part of this is, you know, for me, walking in today was one of those days where I was thinking more about what do I have to do today? What is my to-do list today? Because, you know, in running the show, we have Olivia running the show today, and we are being observed by three new producers and who are learning. And so one of the things that I think about is, you know, how can I connect the dots to make sure that the people that need help are getting the help they need? And, you know, just watching, you know, Jacob, you know, mentoring people. But this idea of stuck is so important. Let's talk about this for a minute, because it's really hard sometimes if you are like new to a job. Let's talk about being new to a job. Everybody returning to the workplace now, a lot of people are feeling, is this my job? Do I remember coming in and sitting at a desk? But I still have my child home. And my boss wants me to come in. I mean, we are in uncharted territory, but I love what you said. Now, let's get back to it. If we don't address those issues and we don't use some new language, what happens is I think we act out. So what does acting out look like? Acting out means we start to be disrespectful. We maybe have a little edge. We're maybe short. We're not open to feedback. So, you know, all these things that will push somebody away so that they don't get into our space, our feeling space. Talk about these behaviors that can show up if we don't have a moment to say, man, I'm unstuck. I know you want me to edit this show, but I don't even have Adobe Premiere loaded.
Well, it's important, I think, when we talk about the actual feeling of being stuck. Sometimes what happens when you're talking about how it shows up, if you can't identify the feeling, and I even think feeling stuck to me is a feeling, like feeling stuck, because I've even said it to myself, I am stuck right now, like I don't know what to do. But that idea is if you can express it and name it and say it, to me, then you can hold some space for what that is without trying to fix it or change it. what happens if you cover it and you deny it and you act like it's not happening and you try to push through? Sometimes the outward expression or the projection of that feeling comes off as like you are really frustrated and you project that feeling onto other people, right? Or you can't admit, like, I don't know what I'm doing. So then you say to other people, why can't everyone else get it together? Like, you start to see stuckness in other places and other people, and you get frustrated by it. Or if life, like little inconveniences that normally would roll off your back, suddenly make you so angry. And sometimes you don't even realize what you're doing. But what I tend to see in my practice as a therapist, I feel like when you study humans, all of us do this. If we repress our emotions or don't let them out in one part of our life, they tend to come out in another. And they may be displaced, but they're the same feeling. We may be angry at ourselves, and then, like, somebody cuts us off, and we get so mad that we then express our – it's easier to be angry at someone else than ourselves, right? And so we do this all the time. So part of using your emotional intelligence is to bring it back, like bring it in, is what I said. Bring it in. What am I feeling? What am I experiencing? What frustrations do I have? And can I name, like, for example, feelings like being stuck? Who wants to say that? And it's not like me, right? We oftentimes are like, no, I'm moving forward and I'm progressing and I can't admit if I have hard or difficult feelings. Like, what if I'm really sad or overwhelmed about something or incredibly angry? Do I get to have those feelings? And again, EQ is about optimizing your expression. So it's like you can still have those feelings, and how, what do we do with them? And even if you don't want to admit you're stuck, because that can be hard to say.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I'm stuck. But I see it sometimes as a relief. The truth is right now I'm stuck. And so sometimes we do this thing with dualistic thinking where we're like, well, I'm stuck, so that's it. So, like, either or, I'm either progressing or I'm not. I'm either moving forward or I'm stuck. I'm either making progress or I've done nothing. And I think, again, if you can use, again, bring it in and be like, no, just in this moment I'm stuck. Just right now, in this moment. And stuck can be a moment, or it can be days, weeks, months, and even years in some parts of our lives. I think if you all look back, there's things that plague different people for a long time where they feel stuck in an area. But if you look at your life in the long game, I think a lot of us can see incredible progress, right? But we don't want to name the feeling for what it is. We certainly don't want to own what we perceive as a negative feeling. And then, oh, man, if I can't get rid of this thing fast, oh, I might as well deny it or repress it or something like that. Does that make sense, Dr. Pat?
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes total sense. And, you know, part of what the conversation is today is really looking at this in a way where each of us completely understand that we can get unstuck. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at what are we stuck in and what does stuck really mean? How does it feel? You know, what are we really trying to say when we say I'm stuck? What's interesting when you look this up now, very different when I looked it up, I don't know, 2003, very interesting what they say about stuck. Past tense and past participle of stuck is stick. Why aren't we talking about that for a minute? Making something stick. When we come back, Carrie's going to take us on a ride. We're going to take a look and dive deeply into not just identify what's going on, but identify our response to what's going on. When we are out there and we find that there's something inside of us that's just causing us to be our own version of the episode of Lucifer, something got to happen. Let's take a short break. Carrie Knudsen joining us here today. Questions, 1-800-930-2819. What are you stuck about? Do you want to get unstuck? And how do you get big out loud? We'll be right back.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Join the New Earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Are you ready to invest in your best self? Join Sabrina Wright as she shares tools for creating joy and balance in your life every single day. Sabrina is here to help you become your greatest advocate and empower you to make decisions that will help you live your best life. The Live the Good Life Show, connecting your physical and spiritual self. Every second Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Find Sabrina at the Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, balance.com. Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Sherry Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com. Are you ready to find out who you really are? Are you ready to have fun and listen to the soul part of yourself? Indulge in a deeper meaning with Laura Goldstein, host of Coffee with the Universe. This show will awaken that true self hidden deep within you and will get you energized on who you were created to be. So go ahead, grab your cup of joe and experience Coffee with the Universe with Laura Goldstein on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Everybody, get big out loud. That's it we're talking about today. But you know what? How do you get big out loud if you don't understand the complexity of being stuck, right? How do you get big out loud if you don't understand the complexity of being stuck? You know, I mean, if you're somebody like me, what does being stuck look like? What happens when you're playing ping pong and one of the balls gets stuck in your robot and then it doesn't come out? And then when it does come out, it comes out at 100 miles an hour and hits you in the side of the face. That is a very good metaphor for what the effect of stuck is. If you are stuck too long, you build up the energy of stuckness. And we're going to talk about what happens when you're building up the energy of stuckness, and underneath that is fear. Before we do that, I want everybody to know, Carrie, how do we find out about you? How do we find out about Knudsen Speaks, your coaching platform, all the work you're doing with people, and happy Pride Month for all of you out there right here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, happy Pride, that's right, and happy Pride in Colorado, too, that's right.
Yeah, okay, Kate, all right, good.
Yeah. Yes, happy Pride everywhere. So you can find out about me at KnudsenSpeaks.com, that's K-N-U-T-S-O-N, Speaks.com, and I provide, what I do is try to take psychology off the couch and bring it to people no matter, you know, what I'm doing. I'm speaking to people virtually or now in person again. Those have started up again, which has been great. Or doing coaching and helping people explore how to really amplify their own EQ to live their lives in ways that are very powerful. And so that's kind of the work that I do, is all around helping people get big in whatever capacity that they can. And through things like doing this show with you has been interesting too, because really talking about it, that's the part about get big out loud. Let's talk about it. Let's jump into hard topics and let's really wrestle with it, because none of this is easy. It's very complex, but it's worth it. I know that for sure. It's worth it.
Yeah. And Olivia, thank you for putting up Carrie's website. Thank you for popping that in there. Carrie, look, I can't say enough about what people have going on right now. It's so complex that folks don't even know that they need help. But
they're not ready. They're not ready to reenter in the workplace as if normal is normal. In some cases, people are really excited about it. I know here we're trying to find the follow the guidelines in Washington State, and I think the guidelines, I have to look them up again to just see, but the guidelines have moved away from, you know, look, if you've been vaccinated, dot, dot, dot. But people are still trying to find their ways. What is the impact of what we're talking about, though? Across the board, it's fear. It's here. It's underneath a lot of things. Tell me from your perspective and from looking at the complexity of being stuck, tell me about what fear might drive in people.
Sure. Well, fear, I think, is a huge underlying thing. And a huge underlying feeling that really perpetuates so much. And sometimes we're so scared, it's easier to stay stuck than to make movement because we can't predict, you know, what's going to happen. And humans love to try to predict what's going to happen. What will happen? Will this work or will that? Will it go this way or that? What if this? What if that? I call it playing what if, that a lot of people really try and to predict the future and say, what if this happens? And it creates a lot of angst, but also fear. And the reality is none of us can control that, right? So what we're looking now at this, what I think of as the next or new normal is quickly approaching, and we're trying to figure out what our lives are going to look like. If you have a lot of fear and or overwhelm, or even what I think of as trauma from what you've experienced in the last year and a half that goes unprocessed and just try to move ahead, sometimes that's part of naming your feeling. Is like, what have I just been through in the last year and a half? You know, you can't be in a crisis and process the crisis at the same time. Right? Because your brain can't do those two things. So when you're in a crisis, it's survival mode. And this last year and a half, a lot of us have just been in the day-to-day. What's going to happen today? What do I need to do? How's my job, my family, my life, my friendships? Everything changed, right? So a lot of us have some trauma that's just on top of the global pandemic trauma. And on top of, like, the national conversation on racism that we're having, on top of, like, the government instability, like, all the things. On top of those big things, we have like things like, I'm sad I didn't get to see my cousin graduate or go to my mom's birthday or see my family, like, or my pet died or whatever, like the things that we all go through, right? So we have a lot to process before we can move forward, but sometimes that feeling of being stuck, it's easier to just repress those feelings or say, I don't want to get into that, than it is to like, let's open this up and see what we've been through, say our truth, and that's part of like identifying feelings. And part of saying, like, man, that's so tough. Or the reason I'm feeling stuck moving forward is because I don't even know what my choices are right now, right? Or I'm not quite sure. Or I'm not the same person I was before the pandemic, right? And so maybe me being stuck is because my choices need to be different because I'm different.
Yeah.
Right? So all of that is a lot. You can't just jump, you know, forward. And I also think fear, to your point, is like, it's easy to blanket. We are scared of so many things. Right? And the idea of fear, it's easy to say I'm scared, right? And then say, okay, then that means I don't have to do anything about it. Fear is just a really good indicator of like something might be changing or I might be out of my comfort zone or I might have a big learning curve. There's a difference between fear and danger. There's a difference between fear and danger.
Thank you.
And that's what I think we really have to recognize. Sometimes when we're feeling the fear, it's a really good indicator of growth, change, opportunity, and that it is a signal that lets you know if you're in tune with your emotions, like, oh, I'm feeling fear. Let's sit with that for a hot second, right? What might that be telling me? Instead of saying that's an excuse just to give up or stay stuck because I'm scared. So this is all kind of, again, the complexity of our emotions and the ability to not judge them as good or bad. Fear is actually really helpful sometimes. If we look at it in a way that says,
yeah,
how can I analyze myself in this moment and not use it as an excuse?
Yeah.
To say so.
I love what you're talking about because, you know, part of this too is looking at the complex nature to know what to do with fear and how quickly to adjust to it. You know, I was talking with Linda yesterday, and I'm so used to being me and so used to just being here and, you know, being part of the network. I forget sometimes what it was like for me, what I forget is, I forget sometimes what it was like for me in my corporate environment when I wasn't the owner, when I wasn't the boss, when I would go in and have to learn something, or when I was given a graphics assignment, like manager of corporate graphics, a failing organization, and what it was like for me in that position. And I forget sometimes what it's like to be new in a situation. And so, you know, I know who I am and my personality and what I'm about. But when other people are with you, they don't, right? Like when people first meet me, they see me in a certain way, and I forget that relationship. And so sometimes you have to reflect back and say, when I was in your shoes, would I really ask a question right now? Would I be so afraid because, Pat, you're in the room. So, Pat, get out of the room so the new people can ask Jacob the question, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a dynamic of fear and stuckness that has to do with other people, places, and things. When we come back, that's what I want to dig deep under. You know, I want to just pull that layer back and talk about the fact that if fear is fear, there's a healthy fear. Like stress, there's stress and then there's eustress. And eustress is good stress. Mm-hmm. But what happens when you cross that line and you move from a healthy awareness of something that maybe gives you a chill, like do not walk down that aisle at 3 o'clock in the morning in New York City. Don't do that. That is like, that's not smart. Don't do that. Or please, don't try to jaywalk in the middle of Times Square in rush hour. That is crazy. When we come back, let's peel it back. Because one of the things we have to learn is, what happens if I'm feeling a little afraid, I feel a little chill, but here I am, I'm a new person on a job, and I don't really understand what's going on. Do I have the ability to ask the question? Do I have the ability to make sure I say, I don't get it and understand? Because I'll tell you, as me, Dr. Pat, running a show, I can't tell you how many times I've had to say to either Olivia or Jacob, okay, I don't understand. Am I hitting, like, the wrong button? I don't know everything. We don't know everything. But when our stuckness gets in the way of our success, what is that like? You know, when my stuckness gets in the way of thinking smartly that the robot is stuck, do not keep trying to have the ball pop out of the ping pong robot, because once it gets unstuck, it will hit you so hard, it will give you a black eye. Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
In to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Steffen each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
In a roundabout of dysfunction, stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
Tune in to the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Patricia McMahon, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia. And I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that our whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. This is a great show for all of you. Get Big Out Loud with Terry Knutson, and I get to hang out with her. And I get to hang out with the most incredible people. You know, Terry is an expert when it comes to emotional intelligence, and we've done several shows about that. The other thing you should know is, you know, she's also that brings a fresh perspective to psychology. You know, this is something she and I learned at different points in time, but it's interesting how we got there. It's the idea of taking psychology off the couch. And that means a lot of things. She is a counselor, though, and you should know that. But she's a speaker. She's a coach. She will help you pull together whatever you need to pull together in your life so you can move forward. You know, today is a very important conversation because we're talking about the complexity of being stuck. Who hasn't felt like they are stuck? You know, I mean, it doesn't matter where you are. I'm sure you've been at that place where you have felt stuck. Maybe in some cases you haven't. Terry, what is the best way for people to find out about you, to work with you, to follow you, all of the above?
Sure. So you can find me anywhere on social media at Knutson Speaks. That's K-N-U-T-S-O-N Speaks. And my website is KnutsonSpeaks.com. And on there is all information about the presentations that I offer, the coaching that I do. And actually during the pandemic, I started off with some interesting, one of my trainings was called Transcending the Unknown. And now people want a new talk called Thriving Through Change. And I thought it was interesting that like I'm developing talks to like update the times that we're going through. So the goal of all my work is that it's useful, it's practical, and it's accessible. And that's what I'm about.
That's it. That's what I love. And yet at the same time, it's like we're going to take the deep dive into conversation. This is a deep dive conversation, so let's get to it. Yeah. You know, here we are. We talked about understanding fears. But is that enough? I mean, great. I understand my fear. I understand my fear of a lot of things. I don't swim, but I love the water. That is paradoxical. What do you do with that, right? People won't let you on their boat if you don't wear, like, a life protector. I understand you can't go, what is that, diving if you don't know how to swim. Well, okay, I can paddle, but swimming, I don't know. My body's not made for swimming. But there's a fear that one might have. How do we get underneath that fear? Beyond understanding the fear, there's something else going on.
because some people can just punch through the fear and skydive, and other people are like, no, I'm not getting off the plane.
That's such a good example. Like the people that just jump out, they're the people that will sign up, and then hell no, I'm not jumping. Right? But that's really good, because like you say, you can understand you have fear, but if you don't, the next level is examine your beliefs around that. And sometimes we believe things about ourselves that simply are not true. And that's part of like taking some time to examine them. And when I say that we believe things about ourselves that aren't true, sometimes people have told us things that then we start to think of as truth. You're not college material. You can't handle that kind of job. I don't know who you think you are, but we don't do those things in our family. Or like, or even trying, those are negative things, but even trying, people saying, you know, you'll never be rich, but you'll always be happy. Or the things that like, you're just not a good speller. Or you've never been athletic.
Yeah, like me trying to fix my hair right here, right? Like this like fixing thing, like with the hair, it's never been my strength. But Linda can come in here and within 15 seconds, all of this would look great.
They did look good.
But how do we get to accept ourselves despite?
Well, part of this idea is examining your belief system so you can accept who you actually are, not who you think you should be or what other people. So like the idea about beliefs, especially around being stuck, like sometimes when we say the belief system is so limiting sometimes, if we don't say, does this belief serve me anymore? Is it helping me get where I need to be? Is it protecting me about something I don't need to be protected from? Is it a cover for, is fear a cover for something else? Like fear is a big cover, right? For like, a lot of, like, here's an example. A lot of times people will say they look for a job, and let's say they don't fit every criteria on it, and they're like, well, I couldn't do that job. It's an easy way to get an excuse, like, see, there's one thing I'm missing, then I can't apply. Like, so then we believe, we made up a story that somehow we have to have every little thing on that box to apply. And a lot of times I find, like, if you have most of the skills and you apply and say you're willing to learn, people would take a motivated, thoughtful candidate over someone that checked out every single box. So we limit ourselves, like, well, it says you have to have all this, and I don't have it, so I'm not going to even apply, or I'm not going to even try. Or, like, the idea of, like, well, I've been told I'm not athletic, so I guess I kind of feel like I want to move my body and play soccer, but I guess I'm not athletic, so I won't do that. Right? So they're like, does that serve you? Does that help you? Does that move the needle forward? And so sometimes examining those beliefs, a lot of times you'll find if you examine a belief is you are stuck because it's actually safe. You're safe even though you don't feel good and comfortable. At least you know what to expect, right? So that's the keeping of step. So at least even if I'm miserable, I know exactly what to expect. I know exactly what to think and exactly what I'll do, and I can be miserable but safe. And so part of examining our belief system is saying, like, is it the fear of change, maybe? Is it the fear of stepping out of my comfort zone? Is it also the fear of the timing? Like, look at everyone else succeeding, and maybe I'm slower than other people. Right? Maybe I need a little more time to figure it out. It doesn't mean I'm not capable or that's not possible, especially comparison. It can really be the thief of joy and a lot of other things. But the idea of comparing yourself to others, that keeps us stuck. So the belief system, sometimes you have to even say, I like to do it in a series around being stuck. Identify the feeling. Okay, I'm stuck right now, right? And then understand how fear is playing into that and examine my beliefs at the current moment, either about who I am, what other people said I could do. This is a quick example, too, of this, what other people said I could do. When I majored in psychology, so many people said, what are you going to do with that degree? And then someone said, are you going to ask people if they want fries with their drinks? Like, you know, and then as I progressed, I was like, well, I love this, right? And then I started, so like, well, currently I work in a school as a therapist in the school. And then some people reduced my job to this. Must be nice to play with kids all day.
I know.
I bet you enjoy your summers off. Like, see how people do that? Then that's like, starting to minimize what I find exciting and passionate and awesome and interesting. See how people do that, though? Like, what are you going to do with that degree? And if I thought, well, what am I going to do? I guess I shouldn't do this because you think I shouldn't. And I guess I don't know. And sometimes when people say, what do you do with a psychology degree? I'm like, what don't you do? Look at my life. It's been amazing because of this degree. It's taken me so many places, and it will continue to do so.
Oh, my gosh.
Same with my person, my passion. Same with, has anyone ever said ping pong? Ping pong? What's, do you play ping pong? Do you find passion? Have you ever been demeaned for that hobby or sport or felt, like, minimized by it?
Well, yeah. What happens with ping pong is, you know, exactly what I said. It's like any sport. We have a couple of people that are really profoundly talented in what they do. You know, our production team, Jacob, you know, Edmund, Malia, Jamie, all of them, Jessica, Linda, everybody's profoundly talented, Olivia, in something specific they do. And to be talented, you have to work at it. Now, seriously, when I talk about ping pong, yeah, they roll their eyes until they see us play in a competition. And Jessica took a picture. She came to one of my first competitions here, and she took a picture of me. It's a very different look on my face.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's we're different under different situations. But let's talk about what the underlying belief or notion is that either lets us glide through a situation and hold our peace or get through a situation and end up showing up as edgy, short, curt, disrespectful, third, not showing up at all because of a belief we have. And all of those affect us. All of those affect us. They stop us from applying for jobs. They stop us from applying for school. Sometimes they stop us from going to the grocery store because we don't believe we have enough money to buy milk for a child. How can we help people understand the belief and understand how to change the belief?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, right? Like, and that's why it's worth to be in the complexity of it because – in order to change your belief system, you have to first know that you have one, right? And see, so like you have to say, what is my belief system about being, like for example, I'll take an example that I see a lot in women, and myself included. Like, am I beautiful and successful and pretty and smart? And like, how do I show that in the world, right? So like a belief system around that is I have to be able to do it all. So I have to, and so to like, work out, keep my house clean, have a job, take care of my kids, be in a relationship, and make it all work. And my level of success might depend on my weight on the scale. Like if I look and see my weight is a certain thing, then I'm a success. Or if my bank account shows a certain number, then I'm a success. If my kids are doing well, then I'm a success. Like whatever marker you want to think about your belief system, and that could be around success or even around beauty. Right? Like, but you have to acknowledge first, what's my belief system around the thing that I'm struggling with? And acknowledge that first. And then I feel like the way to work through that is the belief system serving me or not? Right? And is what role is fear playing? But also, like, naming it, like, oh, I'm really struggling with, let's say if I say, I'm struggling right now with, society's expectations of how I look and the number on the scale and how I feel about myself. And I want to make some changes, but I feel stuck because I don't know how to do that. And am I doing it because of an external force and an internal desire? And then what does success look like? Is it what the doctor says, what I say, if people notice? Like, do you see how this all gets into play? And we need to wrestle with that a bit to say, like, what am in this place in my life right now? With who I am in this moment, what does that look like for me? So is the number on the scale going to determine success? Is it how I feel about myself and move? Is it my food choices? What is it that brings it back to me? And this is the thing I think moves the dial forward on anybody being stuck. It has to mean something to you because society, to me, always moves to the limiting and the little bit negative in terms of what are you going to do with that or ping pong or what? Like,
oh, my God. You should have heard people talk to me about my psychology degree. Okay, if we really want to go off on psychology degrees and what people think of them, let's talk about that. But the point is this. What do we do with that feedback? And this is what I want to talk to you about because for a long time,
that stuck in, that just like stuck to me. But I had a game plan for my degree. Of course, I'm not living that game plan because that really was not the game plan I was meant to have with this, right? This is the game plan. But how do we help people hold stand in our power to stay true for who we are? Because in the end, we may not be able, at the dimension we're living in, explain why we have a knowing about who we are, what we want to be, and how we want to be that person.
Yes.
And how do you, have you been able to help people stand in their power about that? Look, I did a show, I don't know, at the beginning of June to really kick off Pride in a new way and to talk about not only are we going through just, you know, racial, some people call it racial discomfort. No, that's not what's happening. We are now pulled an onion back to identify the racism that we have, the homophobia that we have, the ageism that we have. And by the way, the latest thing, ladies of all ages, if you are not following current events, is the Senate filibustered on a bill that would give women equal pay. Nobody looked at that. But the point is this. How do we get past any of that and understand who am I? What do I believe? And with that belief, how am I going to be in the world, Carrie?
Yes, that is such a beautiful way to frame it, because the truth of it is, to me, that we do have to go inward and ask ourselves those questions. Normally, what we do as humans, we tend to go outward, not only for approval, but for solutions. What do you think I should do? Do you like me? Do you think this is good? Is this okay? And then when we get shut down, or we're like, what are you going to do that degree? Or like, well, that's a stupid idea, or whatever. Like, or whatever the judgment is, that then we start to believe that about ourselves or whatever. Part of the magic is when you can go inside of yourself, because you have to give yourself time and space to do this, and you have to be thoughtful about it, and it can't be done from a place of punishment. So, like, I'm going to punish myself into getting unstuck by, like, being really rigid and, like, pushing it through and whatever. It's the antithesis of what you need to do to make progress. Loving yourself, focusing on yourself, and giving time to yourself to see where you're at. Not as good or bad, just what is in this moment for me? What is true for me right now? And usually what I see in people is they're doing the best they have with what they have in any given moment. They're doing the best they possibly can, but they don't even give themselves credit for that. And so it's hard to move forward from a place of less than or constriction or meanness towards yourself or judgment. And so the magic, I think, when you come with coming in is being like, I'm not going to be judging. I'm going to be an observer. And I'm going to look at what's going on as an observer, but as someone who loves me very much. And it doesn't want to criticize, but wants to be curious. Being curious is very different than being critical, right? I'm wondering why I'm doing this. I'm wondering why I'm feeling this way. I can see my emotions in this way. What is around this anger and sadness and overwhelm or stuckness or disappointment or frustration or devastation, whatever the big words are, the level two words, like I said before. That is the place to start. And it also, there's another little key there, too, is you have to believe in your worthiness, that you're worth the struggle, that you're worth the time to figure it out, and that you, no one does truly know better than you. It's great to have trusted friends and supporters and coaches and books and resources, but oftentimes we go down the rabbit hole of those things, and that's like the other or the outside, and we do it at the expense of ourselves. But a lot of us haven't practiced. What do I really want? What makes sense for me right now? What do I need right now? Right? And so that's why it's complex. But I do think the key is going inside yourself first, not with criticism, but with compassion and love, and especially curiosity.
Yes. Right? You know, when I was in my corporate skin, and, you know, I get in my corporate skin from now and again, and I think that, you know, when you have new people in your environment and they don't know you yet, if you ever heard me give somebody instructions, you would think that I have an ex-military.
What it is I've learned over time that when people are hungry to learn, they want you to cut to the chase. Tell me what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Linda and I were talking about this over the weekend, and Jessica was talking about being trained by Heather, military. And what we decided is we have to apply that same level of training for our new people. We have to be able to say, we gave you a notebook, we gave you a binder, write in it. If somebody shouts out a name of a client, write it down. If you don't know how to spell it, you should ask. Because in our environment, you know this, Carrie, probably you're not going to get another opportunity where somebody is going to say it again. If you had asked Jacob or Olivia or me, or if you even asked Olivia what she just showed on the screen 2 minutes ago, she'd probably say, I'm not exactly sure. We're in a fast-paced world. Talk to me about how we can be responsive in a fast-paced world, even if we let our fear or get in the way of us. And certainly intimidation is a showstopper. If you're intimidated by somebody, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there.
Yes, intimidation is a showstopper.
Ugh.
Is comparison is see how many things are out there though
comparison
being aware
with you. Yeah.
Being aware of the things that are out there that can get you, and also the things that like well because you are like oh I'm you have to say out loud oh wow I'm really comparing myself and that's making me anxious or like I feel like everyone else is moving ahead and I'm not or I feel like stuck in this place and I just don't know how to get out. Part of it is recognizing that and also we are in a very fast-paced world, and at the same time I still think there is room.
Yep.
What I think is I bring it in. If you know that you're going to have to ask questions and get out of your comfort zone and jump, like especially you're talking about your new employees and their jobs, part of moving forward is even telling yourself before you get in an environment, here's how I want to show up. I want to be that person to ask questions. I'm going to be that person to make sure I understand things. I'm going to be that person. In this environment, I need to show up a certain way. So how do I need to steady myself in my holistic part of my life so in this environment I can show up? And here's a quick example of something I do. When we were in the pre-COVID world and I would get ready for a talk, I would have to physically, like I usually would go to the bathroom and just be in the stall, and I would shake off everything that had getting there, getting set up, the sound and mic check, whatever, and I would just be like, be present in this moment with these people. Whatever happened to you, whatever, like in one time my car broke down on the way to a place the tow truck guy ended up dropping me off at the gig. And I remember I came in because I had my jacket on and my snow boots, and the tow truck driver had dropped me off. And it was so funny because I was flustered and I was like not ready to engage with this audience. But I literally was like, I need 1 minute. I went to the bathroom, took off my jacket, shook it off, and I'm like, you need to be present for these people in this moment. You can process your crazy car breakdown, truck driving, getting dropped off by the tow truck driver in about 2 hours. But right now, be present. Show up as the best person for these people. Because in this part of your life, you know, we have different parts of it, you need to show up as this person right now, right? So being conscious of things like that can really help you in different environments. It doesn't mean you're on all the time, though. And that's, I mean, finding space to process,
yeah.
Slow down, be thoughtful. All those things are really important.
You have been listening to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will help you to know which thoughts are keeping you small in order for you to get big. Get big and live your life out loud. For more information, visit KnutsonSpeaks.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday to you, Benny Mathers, here for a look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update around the town over on I-5 northbound near the on-ramp from South 320th Street. Looks like around Mount Post 144, a recent collision partially blocking that ramp. Fire assistance and state patrols have arrived in the city and they are taking care of that collision. Stay tuned for another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's Recovery Recharge Radio with your host, Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. And is gambling a mental illness? More on that after news and weather to find out on Recovery Recharge Radio.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. There are no reports of injury so far after a massive explosion at an Illinois chemical plant. It happened this morning at ChemTool Incorporated in Rockton, prompting a mandatory full-scale evacuation. Fire crews are powerless so far to directly attack the blaze due to its size and intensity. ChemTool produces fluids, lubricant, and grease products. The Justice Department will be held responsible if it veers off course. That's according to Attorney General Merrick Garland, who's pledging strict accountability if the department doesn't uphold its mission of impartial, nonpartisan justice. An independent inspector general is investigating reports that the Trump Justice Department obtained secret subpoenas for the data of two Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee. Garland released a statement saying political or other improper considerations must play no role in any investigative or prosecutorial decisions. New York City will honor those on the front lines of coronavirus with a ticker tape parade this summer. Scott Pringle reports.
Mayor de Blasio says on July 7th, healthcare workers and a number of other essential employees like educators, grocery store clerks, and municipal and transportation workers will ride floats up the Canyon of Heroes in Lower Manhattan.
I think it's going to be a moment of just pure appreciation for folks who did something heroic and who really deserve their moment to be praised by the whole city.
He says this will be the first true large parade in New York City since the pandemic began.
Vice President Harris says there's a lot of misinformation about vaccine safety circulating in the U.S. Speaking in South Carolina, Harris noted that all vaccines available have been through rigorous trials and were approved by the FDA.
These vaccines were developed over a decade of research. I know it seemed like it happened overnight, but it didn't.
Harris said access has been a major barrier for some people, adding that pharmacies are keeping their doors open 24 hours on Fridays in June. Harris pointed out that Uber and Lyft are giving free rides to and from vaccinations. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hi, break time? I know you. I'm Cologuard, a prescription colon cancer screening option for people 45 plus at average risk. It seems like you take care of yourself.
I do. I play tennis. I try to eat well.
What about screening for colon cancer?
Not yet.
Don't wait. Colon cancer is more treatable when it's caught in early stages.
Tell me more.
Cologuard is non-invasive and is used at home. It detects altered DNA in your stool to find 92% of colon cancers.
92%?
Yep, even those in early stages.
This was seen in a clinical study with patients 50 and older. Any positive results should be followed by a diagnostic colonoscopy. False positive and negative results may occur. Cologuard is not a replacement for colonoscopy in high-risk patients. Do not use if you have had adenomas, have inflammatory bowel disease and certain hereditary syndromes, or a personal or family history of colon cancer.
Most insured patients pay $0. Ask your provider or an online prescriber if Cologuard is right for you, or visit requestcologuard.com.
I'm I.
Excellent.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Welcome, welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Welcome to my show, Recovery Recharged, with my illustrious co-host, Dr. Pat.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have some fun today.
We are. And I think we're going to need like three episodes for this guy. Wait,
I do, too.
Hear about this. Unbelievable.
I do, too.
Well, I am thrilled to talk about a subject that I think we're really going to get into because, you know, Dr. Pat, you and I talk about addiction, and that means alcohol, and that means drugs, and we've had our own personal stories when it comes to that, and we've had different people on this show that have had process addictions, and one of those people is here with us today. We are talking today about gambling and the possibility of gambling addiction and whether or not gambling is indeed a mental illness. So I have brought an expert to our show today, and his name is Dan Trillero. Let me tell you a little something about Dan. He is the Assistant Executive Director for the Council on Compulsive Gambling in New Jersey. He spent 7 years in this kind of role. He now supervises the staff in planning prevention, outreach, and educational groups. He also does workshops, and he provides support for the community as well. He has been doing this since 2015. He's been in front of 40 different organizations and counting on this subject. And for those of you listeners, I would love you to write this down. As of the beginning of January of 21, he is now on a weekly radio show with Craig Carton on Sports Radio, WFAN, to discuss gambling addiction. Transformation Talk Radio listeners, please welcome to Recovery Recharge, Dan Trillero. How you doing, Dan?
I'm well, Ellen. Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Pat, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. It's a big conversation, and boy, I'll tell you, it's long overdue.
It really is. And I know you have a lot to say, and I want you to talk about two things. First of all, Dr. Pat and I have always talked about the fact that during COVID-19 and during the pandemic, alcohol sales had risen over 500%. Everybody's drinking in isolation, doing things at home that they shouldn't be. Drugs get delivered to the front door. What's going on in the world of gambling? What have you seen post-pandemic and now, what's happening in the gambling world, Dan? Tell us about it.
Great question, and we get that question a lot. You know, we own and operate the 800 Gambler Helpline. So the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey is a long, fancy title for 800 Gambler, which is how we're better known. And so we field calls not just from New Jersey, but all around the country. And what we've seen as kind of common experience is that before the pandemic, we saw people calling with a variety of gambling-related problems, scratch-off lottery tickets, in-person casino play, sports betting where it was legal as it expands. Obviously, we'll talk about that more later. But since the pandemic, as COVID settled in March of 2020, and as we moved through that time, we noticed an increasing number of people experimenting with online casino. So internet-based casino games, online sports betting as it started to return, even the online lottery where you can buy tickets from your mobile device or your laptop. And now since pandemic, you just don't leave those behind as things start to open. People continue to experience gambling-related harms using the internet or using their mobile device or smartphone. In New Jersey, over 90% of all sports bets are placed on someone's mobile device. So it is now commonplace to gamble on your technology.
That's unbelievable. And like you said, more and more and more. So tell us, what's the difference between somebody that, you know, maybe buys a weekly lottery ticket or even plays a daily number and somebody that really is considered a disordered gambler? Give us the breakdown, will you?
Yeah, and please explain this, too. Because I think this is really one of these conversations, Ellen, when we used to talk about early on, when we tried to explain, how do you know you've crossed the bridge from having a few cocktails to, like, I can't live without a few cocktails? Because I think gambling is the same, but I'm not sure, Dan.
Yeah, and great point, Dr. Pat. You're right, because, you know, problems exist along the continuum, whether it's substance use disorder or a process addiction like gambling disorder. The diagnostic manual, DSM-5, recognized gambling as a formal disorder back in 2013. It elevated it to the same level as substance. It was called the only non-substance-related disorder. So how does someone know if they're starting to have a problem? A lot of it has to come down to the fact, are you constantly thinking about it? You know, all that mental space that's used up when you're preoccupied, you're thinking about the next time you're going to place a bet, the next time you're going to get that lottery ticket or bet on that event. Are you also being truthful to the people close to you? Or are you finding yourself starting to lie about your behaviors and your actions? Those are some of the telltale signs when you can start to see someone kind of falling down the path. Because to your point, Ellen, gambling is a form of entertainment that is socially acceptable. We estimate around 90% of people can gamble socially, responsibly. It's not creating a problem in their life or the lives of those around them. They're still able to maintain their jobs and have relationships, go to work, and they're able to function. But as you start to move along a continuum, you start to realize there are some warning signs. Maybe spending a little bit more time than they would have. Maybe they're spending a little bit more money than they should. And as I mentioned before, the lying, the preoccupation. And when it continues despite the negative consequences that start to creep in, so if you're starting to have relationship issues, if you're starting to experience some harms associated with the gambling, and it still continues, that's when you really know you're moving into that problematic use, similar to what you would see with substance.
So if you find yourself lying to your spouse about how much money you spent when you went to off-track betting or when you went to play the slots at the nearest casino, then you really have to think about whether or not you have a problem.
Yeah, and I'll add, when we receive phone calls to 800-GAMBLER, we receive not just phone calls from people who are struggling with an addiction to gambling, but also from the loved ones or the family members, because oftentimes they will see it first before the person who is struggling. And we see that in all addiction. Sometimes it's seen by the loved ones or the close family members. And gambling is one of those addictions where you can't test positive on a urine screen, right? You're not gonna pee dice if someone gave a gambler a urine test, right? And you're not gonna have, right? I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I mean, it would be great if we can do that, but it may be as a loved one beginning to see all of the bills that are coming in overdue, or maybe the electricity is going out. Dr. Pat, have you ever had a gambling problem? Do you have a gambling issue?
Yeah, you know, no. I mean, I'm one of these lucky people that have had just about every other, you know, thing we've talked about. But gambling for me was always very interesting. And I have to say I started at a very young age. And what I mean by that is, you know, what kind of family are you raised in? So if you're raised in a family like mine where the relatives come over and the first thing you see are a bunch of cigars, a bunch of Zambuca, alcohol, right? And then pinochle and money. So that's like, you know, your daddy's girl, you're running around the table, certainly not going to get a hit off the cigar from daddy that night, but you do get to run your finger in the Zambuca, and you never quite understand the gambling part. But later on in life, what got really interesting is in relationship with somebody that was, if I look back now, I don't like to assess another person, you know, but if I look back now, are you going to the racetrack at an age that you shouldn't be going into Yonkers on a school night? And, you know, are you in relationship with somebody that cannot not go? I cannot not go.
Right.
This is before online betting, but cannot not go. So I love the racetrack. I love the trotters. I love, you know, I mean, I grew up in that environment, and I'm highly intuitive, so I would win a lot. What would happen with me is they dragged me to the track.
Well, you were the good luck charm.
Yeah. So I built up this immunity because I hated to go to the track and have that responsibility. You know, there was a point in time in my life where I thought maybe I did. You know, there was a point in time where the casinos opened in Jersey. Right, Dan? And, you know, I would watch myself. But I got a question for both of you. What is the relationship between gambling addiction
and alcoholism? Is there one? What is the numbers on it? You know what I'm asking you?
Yeah.
It's like I was reading a story about Ben Affleck, and I've been following Ben because I care about Ben and his journey and what he's done and his struggles. And I just wonder about the relationship between each of those.
Yeah, you typically see a strong connection between certain activities. And alcohol and nicotine dependency are two that we often see connected with gambling. It's estimated that 60% of people with a gambling disorder also have an alcohol use disorder. And approximately the same percentage of people also have a nicotine dependency. So you start looking at those connected behaviors. And then, Dr. Pat, I'm thinking back, if you were to take a trip in person to the racetrack or to the casino, you frequently will see someone who's wagering or betting on horses or slots or table games having a cocktail in their hands while they're gambling, or at the track smoking a cigar or a cigarette or a pipe as they're reading the racing program. And you look at these connected behaviors, and, you know, that matters so much because when we're talking about the other end of addiction, which is recovery, what are we doing in our recovery life so that the addiction no longer fits in? But if we're maintaining these connected behaviors, if I stop gambling, but I continue to drink and smoke, am I at risk for return to use? I would think so.
You know, I mentioned Ben Affleck. One of the comments he made that stuck on, it's like I pull out this quote and I give it to a lot of ladies I work with. He talks about compulsive behaviors. And I think his quote was, people with compulsive behavior, and he says, I'm one. You know, have a kind of basic discomfort all the time. They're trying to make stuff go away. And he talks about the fact you're trying to make yourself feel better, eating, drinking, sex, gambling, shopping, whatever it is. But in the end, it makes your life worse. And that statement is so telling because isn't that why we're doing the show today?
Yes, absolutely, to point out how this kind of compulsive behavior, it kind of snowballs. I mean, it's really a snowball effect. And look, I'm just like you, Dr. Pat. My dad, you know, my dad played pinochle, mom played mahjong. It was all in fun. It was all for money. Dad was at the track every Saturday night. I was learning how to read a racing form. And, you know, and if you get into that point, just like we do with alcohol or drugs, where you want more and more and more, more and more, and you have a propensity for that addiction, it's very, very easy, just like Ben Affleck would say, to pick up a myriad of other addictions. I mean, it's just what our brain lends itself to doing. And Dan, you said something very interesting. You said 60% of those addicted to gambling may very well also have a substance abuse addiction. And in some ways, that's hopeful because if we can understand the addictive brain and learn how to get our substance abuse addiction in remission and in recovery, then we realize that we have to work on our other process addictions as well.
Agreed. And it comes down to treating the whole person. You know, I was at a conference back in 2017. It's called CADCA, which is the Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America. They have a national conference pre-COVID every year at National Harbor in February. And there was a doctor there who one time made a statement that stuck with me, and he said, the end goal of treatment is a sustainable and meaningful long-term recovery. And obviously what's sustainable and meaningful differs from person to person, but if we're not treating the whole person, how do we have a meaningful and sustainable long-term recovery? We have to move people from just surviving to thriving. And that's a key component of addressing all of the factors at play. A person might have an addiction to gambling, alcohol. They also might have a mood disorder, depression, mental health issue. Was that triggered by the alcohol and the gambling, or was that pre-existing and they're using the others as coping mechanisms? So addiction is biopsychosocial. It stems from so many different places. And we have to really look at the whole picture.
So if somebody wanted to reach out to 1-800-GAMBLER, what kinds of help would they receive? What could you tell them?
Sure. So 1-800-GAMBLER is a referral helpline. Oftentimes people call 1-800-GAMBLER and they see that we offer help. So we'll take phone calls at times from someone who's in debt and they need a loan for $5,000. I say that's not the type of help that we offer. We're not here to help bail you out. We're here to help provide resources. The names of clinicians, those who are certified gambling counselors. We refer people to the 12-step recovery rooms of Gamblers Anonymous or other recovery resources, because there's many paths to recovery. All roads lead to recovery. And then we'll also kind of point people recently since COVID, there's a wonderful website that's really being utilized called gamblersinrecovery.com. It's a centralized link with a list of all Zoom meetings all around the globe. And these are meetings that are GA sponsored and non for both the gambler and the loved ones.
That's amazing. So what you're saying is, what you said to recap is that there are maybe three kinds of gamblers: the social gambler, which, as you said, about 90% of us are, and then maybe the problem gambler, which is someone that maybe is losing a little bit more than they intended, and maybe they're starting to lie a little bit, and they're starting to spend a little more than they wanted to spend. And then you categorize a problem gambler as a disordered gambler. Is that correct? Talk a little bit about more about what that means and what that looks like.
Absolutely. So as we move along the continuum of someone who starts to develop a problem with their gambling, the clinical definition, the clinical diagnosis would be disordered gambling. And that was brought around in 2013 in the diagnostic manual, essentially the Bible for mental health and illnesses and issues that people deal with. So there's a diagnostic code. So it's a diagnosable condition, and roughly 2 to 3% will suffer with gambling disorder. And gambling disorder is where you start looking at the preoccupation, the isolation, the continuing despite the negative consequences. So full-blown gambling disorder is almost the extreme form of someone who's starting to develop the problem, and it's now manifest itself as it continues into a really severe issue. And that's where you start to see potential for job loss, relationship loss, maybe loss of time spent with loved ones. Loss, some mental health issues can also start to develop, maybe depression or anxiety. So that's where you really want to understand, what are the nine factors? Which ones of the nine factors is the person suffering from? And there are questions that a person can ask of themselves to identify how severe is this really getting. That's where working with a professional can really, really help.
Is there any correlation between this disordered gambling and suicide rates?
There are. We do know the nature of gambling disorder lends itself to having higher attempted suicide and suicidal ideation. And you know, people will ask, well, why is that? Or what is it about gambling that would lend itself to having higher rates of suicidal thought, attempt, and completion? We have to remember that gambling is based on an intermittent reward schedule. And early on, whether Dr. Pat or Ellen or myself, we learned that every so often we actually win something, and it feels really good.
Yeah.
And you anchor that, right? It's the dopamine that's released. Feels great. I just picked the winning horse at Yonkers or the Meadowlands. I want to do that again. And over time, most people can kind of manage that. Okay, I was lucky, or it's not the norm. But someone who doesn't process gambling normally, they're not going to think of it that way. They're going to start thinking of it as, wow, that felt really good, and I want to feel good again. I want to avoid that negative state that I'm in, and I want to feel good. So they know that they're going to win every so often. They just don't know how much, how often, or when it will occur next. And they will spend the days, weeks, and months chasing that feeling. Gambling is not a money issue. It's an emotional issue.
And it's that dopamine flowing, right, Dr. Pat? It's chasing that high, right? We can relate to that, no?
Well, and what it is, and let's talk about this again, what it is also is that we now understand, and to take Ben Affleck's words, we've never been in a time in the world, by the way, where people have been at the same level, close, very similar levels of pain, right? You know, this is the first time. This is new territory. Maybe if you want to go back 3,000 or 4,000 years, maybe. But then they didn't know it.
But we are living at a time now where we're looking at people experiencing levels of pain around an external scenario that has caused their internal world to implode. And we are going to try to find the comfort that we need to find. Now, what's the most easily accessed? Online booze and buying it and online gambling. There's never been more of a forum for people to do that. Everything from Bitcoin gambling to, I mean, there's just so much, right?
And it's easy to hide, too.
It's easy to, oh, my, yeah. How hard is it to hide a lottery ticket? So when you talk to people, Dan, I want to ask you this, because this is one of those things. People don't think, oh, lottery ticket. No, I'm not some addiction. I'm an addiction. Because there's a line that gets crossed. There's once in a while, you're the person, I got to buy my weekly lottery ticket. Okay. But when you go from I got to buy my weekly lottery ticket to I've just spent half of my rent on lottery tickets, it's an issue. Can we talk about that behavior? Because when it comes to gambling, gambling is a behavioral, but it's also hits your pocketbook. And when things like that hit your pocketbook and you find yourself at the $5,000 poker table and you don't make $5,000, it's an issue. Can you talk about that? Because that's the pathway, that's the road that you go down that you cannot return back from unless you really hit the bottom and ask for help.
It, you know, and that's such a loaded statement and so accurate. That's almost a show in and of itself, because there's so many paths, there's so many tributaries along that pathway, because it goes from the marketing, right? Let's first take a look at marketing and how you start to develop these ideations that, okay, I've won in the past, I will win again. It's that pronoun that a person starts saying, I will win my money back from the casino or from the lottery. They get very possessive about it. It's no longer a fun form of entertainment where you just give some money away and you've tried and now you move on to something else. There almost becomes this connection. It becomes this lover for some people who struggle with, you know, addiction is a relationship. You have a defunct relationship with this other entity that will love you and hate you at the same time, and you don't know how to abandon the behaviors or the relationship. So when someone is spending that money on lottery, and they might justify it all day long, I've won in the past, I had a friend who won, I'll stop when I get my money back. What we know over time is that people do things to avoid pain. Right? Oftentimes, human nature is to avoid pain and try to experience pleasure. So we live in a vulnerable time. There's a lot of pain. I agree with you, Dr. Pat. This is a very unique time. And people are using technology. They're using alcohol to escape that negative mood state that we talked about before. And they're experimenting. You know, humans, we love to experiment. We love to be curious. Our curiosity is piqued on new things, which is all great. But the financial burden that's left behind from someone who has gambled a lot of money, not to mention the loved ones and family members, they're left in the dark oftentimes, and they don't see it. Gambling has the highest financial distress of all the major addictions, because typically someone uses money to gamble. Now, you don't have to use money, but that's what people most frequently will use. So it's this compounding effect of I want to get the money back, now I'll get myself even, and you're just chasing. There's that chasing again, chasing that feeling, and it's starting to develop negative consequences.
Well, whether people are gambling for money or some kind of valuable object, it is something that one has to risk losing, and that loss can be devastating. So we have to ask ourselves the most difficult questions. I mean, you know, on the 800 Gambler website, you can ask yourself, you can take a little quiz and find out if you have any real difficulties about gambling. And also gambling in ways that we still have to talk about. We're going to do some more of that when we come back.
But Dan, I was flabbergasted when you told me the other day that a lot of the hotline calls you're hearing about are things like day trading and sports betting,
yes,
and video gaming, and I really want to go into that because people don't even realize that's not, you know, that's part of the whole disordered gambling situation. And it's not just sitting in front of a slot machine or playing the ponies, so to speak. Right? There's much more to it, isn't there?
There's the psychology of gambling is popping up across so many different areas of entertainment that our children consume, that we consume as adults, and that our family members and even parents consume. And it's that concept of trying to win something where there's risk or uncertainty and how that feels to the body physiologically and the chemicals that are produced. That's the hook. It's the unknown. It's that, wow, it feels great. Let me do it again. And that's popping up, Ellen, to your point, in video games. You know, I just did a webinar last week on day trading and gambling and the connection. And we're starting to see similar behaviors. Day trading is not recognized or regulated as a form of gambling, but we have to look at the behaviors that are associated with it. It's so vital.
Yeah. We're going to talk about this when we come back, right? Because these are the contemporary versions of what old school back in, I'm going to go join the poker game in the back of Joey's grocery store. You know, these are the contemporary versions and are so accessible all the time. When we come back, right, not only do I want to ask you about this, but I would like to talk about the fact, how do these new digital formats affect an individual's life? And what do I mean about it? Can you actually do a job and be online and gamble at the same time? How does that work? Ellen, you ready to go to break?
This will be great.
Absolutely. I can't wait to come back, Dan. Stay with us.
All right, great, everybody.
You.
Let's take a shorty. We'll be right back.
On a warm summer's evening, train bound from Dover, met up with the gamblers. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took time to stare out the window at the dark.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lau, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit trishlaub.com. That's Trish Laub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Learn how to lead a happier life on Miles to Go with Brittany Miles. How to lose to gain it all. Join Brittany every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Listen as coach and healer Brittany Miles shares stories to teach you about surrender. For more information about Brittany, MilesToGoCoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your life into overdrive and stop wasting your time? If so, then I want to invite you right now to the Body Regeneration Online Academy with me, Tracy Alex. In a world filled with so much information, you can get overloaded and confused, like feeling like you've tried everything and still no results. If this is you, then this platform is for you. Help you step into your power, your intuition, and gain clarity. You will learn simple tools that you can use as you walk down the street, and I will teach you how to grow a stronger connection to the God consciousness. Imagine having me as your coach, shifting you, uplifting you, empowering you every week, and most of all, helping you stay connected so you can navigate your life journey with ease and grace. Nothing
nothing will be able to get in your way. But you will have a community filled with souls just like you to pick you up when you fall down and support you on your wins. No one can go this journey alone. If you are ready for your live activation, check me out at TracyLClark.com and join the TLC Body Regeneration Online Academy now.
But if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to
know. Love it. Oh, goodness, I love it. Kenny Rogers, that's wonderful. Know when to hold them, know when to fold them. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. I am here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Pat. And we are doing Recovery Recharge with our guest, Dan Trolero, who is the Assistant Executive Director of the Council on Compulsive Gambling in New Jersey. We're having an amazing conversation about what is current, what's going on through COVID-19, and most of all, what constitutes a social gambler from a disordered gambler. And now we're going to take a look at some of those particular process addictions that we don't even think of, like video gaming and day trading and sports betting. So Dan, let's talk about that a little bit and maybe the difference between legal and illegal gambling around all of these things. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So what we've seen, let's start with New Jersey. With the state of New Jersey, there's many forms of legal gambling. And we have, whether it's sports betting, internet wagering, horse racing, lottery, casino, we have various forms of legalized gambling. But then you have those that are not really technically gambling, but you have the same response in the body. You have that excitement, that euphoria, feels really good, and the behaviors that go along with a gambling-like activity. And it will shock people to know that we receive helpline calls, not just from people struggling with legalized gambling, but also people who struggle with day trading, as we talked about before the break, video game addiction, fantasy sports contests. We even have people who have called once or twice, not very common, about extreme couponing, right? So something where there's this. Yeah, Ellen got excited for that one.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's a way that where people don't know what their issue is, their concern, they start to recognize, hey, this is the problem. I don't know what my problem is. Speaking specifically to video gaming and day trading, as we mentioned before, that's not technically defined or regulated as gambling. However, as the gains are being made in video games, or as someone's following the stock market so intently as a day trader, the preoccupation, right, they both can lend themselves to developing problems. It can be problems of spending too much time, too much money. With video games, parents might receive a charge on their credit card statement for in-game purchases. You know, my child just spent $500 purchasing prize crates or loot boxes, as they're called. What are these things? And what the parents need to know is that if your child is spending money on prize packs or loot boxes, that's a gambling mechanic. It's not gambling, but it looks and feels like it because they're spending money in hopes of trying to win something of value where there's risk or uncertainty. That's the essence of gambling. And that's why parents need to be aware of these things.
Exactly. And you said, too, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win money in return, but they're going to win something in return. They're going to, you know, get to the end of the game or win the, you know, the golden crown or whatever. It's that fantasy world of the adrenaline going and the feeling of I have to win, I have to get through. You know, on top of which, what you said is really very, very telling about these other process addictions. How much time are you spending in that preoccupation? These are the questions you need to be asking, and these are the questions you need to be asking the people around you. If your son or daughter is upstairs all day long playing video games constantly and not socializing, not getting out there, not doing schoolwork, or if your husband or wife is spending so much time sports betting or day trading, it doesn't matter if they're winning or losing anything. The hours of time make it an addiction. Wouldn't you say, Dr. Pat?
You know, I think that it's twofold for me when I think about it. I think you're absolutely right, the hours and time. And this really gets back to the question that I was asking before the break. And that is, you know, an aspect of behavior that feels so normal to you that you can't see it. And when you start to have these outposts of behavior, look, I'm going to jump to a different topic. I'm going to jump to a different idea, but the same topic. I don't know, with all my years of recovery and addiction and helping people and Ellen, right, some of the things we've done, I am at a loss about cell phone addiction. We're not going to cover it today, but I'm telling you, online gambling is the same. And here's why it's the same for me, because it feels so normal. Now, let me just, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to give people the wrong idea. Not normal, everybody. Gambling online, like when you're supposed to be like doing your job, that is not a normal event.
Right.
But it's not like getting high on drugs. Like, or I'm sitting here and I'm drinking myself to death, and you know I'm drinking because I can't talk. It's like your persona, you get to stay just like the Dan persona. Ellen stays like the Ellen. I stay like the Pat, unless things go wrong. And that's when you see the change. Isn't that one of the greatest challenges when we're talking about gambling addiction? Because we don't gamble too much and slur our words.
Right.
No.
Go ahead.
Well, in the same token, I hear what you're saying, okay? It doesn't affect our brain maybe in that way, and it doesn't affect our health in that way. But Dan, I'm sure you've seen some major devastation. I mean, you talked about suicide rates before, and maybe we're not drinking ourselves to death, but maybe we're losing our homes. Maybe losing our family, you know. I mean, there must be a devastation point that you have seen many times as how serious this can get.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, actually, along this line, some of the stages as to how it gets to be so bad. But going back to the point about the normalization, I'm reminded of a video that the British Broadcasting Corporation put out a number of years ago where they placed a gambler inside an MRI scanner. And they took a look at his brain as he was gambling on a roulette wheel. And what they concluded from looking at the brain activation was that it wasn't just the winning that mattered, but it was also the anticipation and the participation. So for gambling, what makes it so unique, and I agree with you, Dr. Pat, that, you know, when you look at cell phone technology, these are process addictions. Gambling falls along the same line because it has nothing to do about the win, about getting that like on Instagram, about having someone comment on social media. It's about the act of participating in the process and then anticipating, will people like this? Will I win a next bet? So there's this brain activation going all along this process. And as you start to go down this path and you start normalizing it, right? That's a very loaded word, normal. You normalize it. Maybe it's normal to me. I've been 11 and a half years since my last bet. So for me, 11 and a half years ago, before that, it was normal to wake up every day and gamble.
That's what I'm saying.
Right? Now, when you create a life where gambling no longer fits in, it's the most foreign thing to me to look backwards and say, how the heck was that ever normal? But that's the stages that we talk about, because for most people, gambling starts off as a fun, enjoyable experience. We talked about it at the top of the show. You win. You have fun. It's not creating problems in your life. Then you start losing. You know, now you're reminded of a time when you used to win, and you'll start thinking, okay, well, I'm in a losing streak. I'll get it back. And maybe you start to tell some white lies or some, you know, whatever. You're starting to make excuses, justify your actions. Then it gets down, you can start to get to the desperation phase where now you're telling bigger lies, asking for loans. You're starting to not go to work. You're starting to call in sick more. Right? If you're a student, your grades are starting to drop. Maybe you're not showing interest in other activities that you previously enjoyed. And it's when that starts to happen and it continues, you get to that critical phase at the bottom, the phase where you're most vulnerable, where you're really experiencing a lot of negative consequences, and that's the pivot point. what do I do? Do I continue on this path, or do I start to look for another opportunity, a better way of living? And honestly, you hear it in the rooms. People come to help when they get sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Oh, my God. I got a message in Skype from somebody in Hawaii I hadn't heard from in a really long time. And you just reminded me of this because I was, like, almost clicked on the link. I almost clicked on the link. And this is what the seduction is. Can we talk about the seduction of gambling? There is,
absolutely.
It's seducing. Why is it? We see it. We see Vegas. We see people. We see people having fun. But there is something else underneath this new digital form that is not as glamorous, but equally seductive. So I get this email, and this is the latest craze. Did you know that there are over 100,000 new Bitcoin millionaires daily?
You want to hear 100,000 in one.
He had me at millionaire.
Right.
Okay, but right? Because this is the hook.
Yes.
And then we go on, and it says, if you're like most people, you probably feel like you missed the boat. This is the 1-2 punch.
Yep.
Of gambling addiction for me.
Yep.
All you need a friend to say is, you missed the $1 million walk through the door at Casino XYZ. Family gets a week. You missed it.
Yep.
You're going to go next time. Can you talk about that seduction? Because it doesn't get talked about enough. And by the way, you mentioned students. We could do a whole show on what's going on with students right now.
100%.
Okay. Tell me 100%. About seduction.
You know, seduction is interesting. You know, Dr. Lori Rugel, who's very well known in the field of gambling addiction and recovery and in the clinical circles, once said that, you know, gambling has the power to change someone's life. In the blink of an eye, in an instant, it can take you from having nothing to having seemingly everything. It can take you out of poverty. It can make you matter. If you feel as if your life doesn't matter or you don't matter in the eyes of those in your circle, all of a sudden you become important and relevant. So it does have that power of seduction to, how do you say, put you on the map of mattering. And I connect that to young people today. When they are so laser focused on mattering, right, the concept of I'm not blank enough, that just carries over all the time. You know, I'm not rich enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not powerful enough. I'm not loved enough. So it's that concept of I'm not blank enough that carries over into adulthood that is seductive. Somebody might say, oh, okay, I had a rough childhood. My job stinks. I'm going to hit this lottery. I'm going to win the Mega Millions, the Powerball, whatever it is, right? I'm going to matter. It's going to make me feel really important. It's going to make me feel good. But here's what people don't understand is that when we see that glamorized on TV, that's not the norm, as we said before. That's the exception. And that's what gets marketed. I want to be very clear. Our agency, the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, is neutral on gambling. We're not for gambling. We're not against gambling. Our mission is to help those who suffer with an addiction to gambling as well as the loved ones. So I want to be very clear on that. I know for myself, I'm against gambling for me because that's all I can control. But if you, Dr. Pat or Ellen, said, I'm going to go spend a dollar on a lottery ticket, okay, go ahead. You know, it's a social form of entertainment for many Americans and many people around the globe. So it wouldn't really make sense for me to go out and say, no, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Balance and moderation are key. And understanding what it is that you're doing, understanding odds, the lack of a likelihood to really win. I will add, people call our 800 Gambler helpline.
Give us that number again, Dan, please.
800 Gambler. They'll call the 800 Gambler helpline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we'll point you in the right direction for referral services to a clinician or a meeting. But when people call, they'll say, I don't gamble. I just play lottery 5 times a week. And if I take the call, I say, hold on a second. You just said you don't gamble, but you play lottery. And they say, yeah, well, that's not really gambling, so I'm not going to win anyway. And that'll kind of launch us into a conversation.
But what we're talking about here today is so really vital and vitally important. Ellen and I have done a lot of shows
I'm not anti-alcohol. I'm not anti-drinking. I'm not anti. Well, I gotta hold my breath here on marijuana for a minute. Hold my breath because
that's fair. Yeah.
People don't call me. you know, you work with ladies, you work with women, and you make a statement like I'm not anti-marijuana, and you know, forget it. You'll lose all your sponsees. But the point is that I'm trying to make is there's a point by which you cannot control yourself.
It's called the addictive brain.
Yeah.
It's called the addictive brain.
Food. It doesn't matter what it is. And, you know, gambling like that about the lottery ticket, that's a beautiful example. It's like the woman that said to me the other day, I don't really have a problem, Pat. I mean, what's the problem? I just keep the gummies out on the counter, and just before I get in the car to go to work, I throw a couple gummies in. What's right? I mean, come on. What's the matter? They're a couple gummies, right? And I'm like, how many kids do you have? You keep your gummies on the counter. Are you like, what? Well, we can't see it, Dan, Ellen. Please help us understand how we can see ourselves better.
Dan, I think you're absolutely right. And all of the phases that you were describing before, Dr. Pat and I can certainly relate to. I mean, the winning phase, the losing phase, the desperation phase, the critical phase. I think we've done that a lot of times in our lives. The hit bottom phase, oh, my God, the feeling that everything is wonderful until it's not. Okay, it was really astute in what you said about that seduction, because no matter what, you are absolutely right, because gambling and winning that money is part of our culture. And it's not only the video gaming and the day trading and the sports betting, but look at our TV shows. Look at Let's Make a Deal. Look at The Price is Right. Look at all of the game shows where money is the object. I mean, even shows like Jeopardy that we love and admire and we go towards. I mean, one of the reasons why it's so seductive and exciting is because there's money at the end of it. There's a prize at the end of it.
Yeah.
So it lends itself to our entire culture.
And there's uncertainty, too. And, you know, Deal or No Deal is a show that I use as a reference point a lot for sports betting, because across the nation, sports betting is expanding on a state-by-state basis. And when you have the ability to wager on a sporting event, it's no longer just waiting for the outcome of the game. It's now, during the game, placing multiple bets throughout the game. And oftentimes the sportsbook operator will give you the opportunity to close your bet early if you want to lock in your money. So it changes the concept of gambling to almost a form of skillful money management and a way to manage your bankroll. It takes the emphasis off the gambling because they'll give you an offer. You can either choose to take the deal or keep pressing on, right? And that's the concept of Deal or No Deal. We're seeing it embedded in culture, and it's normalized to do those things.
It does, and it certainly does bring out the addict in all of us. Could you talk for a few minutes about the differences maybe in demographics? Is it different for a man to look at gambling differently from a woman or a youth than a senior? Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we always try to tailor our prevention programs and our ads within the state of New Jersey around different demographics. So if we're talking about a male gambler, we're really looking at someone who's an action-type gambler, someone who prefers to participate in games of skill or card games like poker, blackjack, sports betting, horse racing. And when I say these are traditionally done, this is not an absolute, because I've known many females who are also sports gamblers. These are just general starting points. A female tends to be more of an escape gambler, a passive form of gambler, scratch-off lottery tickets, slot machines. Maybe the female gambler is gambling because there's an emotional issue they don't know how to quite deal with, or they don't want to deal with it. And so they'll gamble as a way of escaping the issue instead of facing it head on. And when you start looking at different demographics, such as seniors, whether it's older adults or teens, older adults oftentimes will develop gambling problems as a result of boredom, life event changes, death of a spouse, perhaps, pension plan. They have access to resources, but they have limited earning capacity in the later years. So that's a real big concern when you have an older adult as a problem gambler. They don't have the ability to maybe go out into the workforce as easily as someone younger might have, right? And then as you go to the other end of the spectrum, when we talk about youth, youth gambling is a real huge concern right now. And I say that because they're normalizing the experience through social media, through YouTube, through parent involvement. They're getting so much. They're sponges. That developing brain is learning so much. And for them to experiment, we did a quick, real quick, we did a survey with Seton Hall University, and the youth that we interviewed did not see sports gambling as a form of gambling. They saw it as an easy way to make money or a fun time with friends. So we have to be on point with our marketing efforts, depending on the demographic.
Did I read someplace that you've seen gambling as young as kids that are, say, 10 or 11 years old?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had a number of cases. I had a firsthand experience. I went into a school in one of the counties in New Jersey, fifth grade classroom, and it was a teacher who had invited me in because there was some gambling going on in the bathroom. It was an inner city location. And when I walked in the classroom, there was a young man sitting in the front row without any sneakers on. And I said, you know, my friend, where's your sneakers? And he said, I lost them. And I said, you want me to help you look for him? So I started looking underneath the desk. I'm looking around. And I knew what he meant. But he said, no, I lost some gambling. He was shooting dice in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And he lost his sneakers to the kid in the back. And I said, what are you going to tell your mom? And he said, I'll just tell her I got beat up like I did last time it happened.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, look, I grew up in an environment in New York where I grew up in the Bronx. And, you know, Joe Maggio, tutor us down, Dad, had a nightclub, and we would spend as a young age going over to his garage, and he had mini roulette wheels, right? I mean, you were walking into a mini casino in his garage. That was my first introduction to learning how to play poker. But I could walk out of there and be done. If you walked out of and I'm telling you, we're like 10 years old now, right? If you walked out of Joe's garage and he wasn't done at 10 years old, 11 years old, you would watch a change in behavior. And that is what happens to us when we get older. You could see the change in behavior. God forbid you have a blackout in Vegas or a blackout with no backup generator in Atlantic City. And isn't that what we're trying to say? Watch the signs. Watch the signs.
Watch the signs. And we saw it when COVID hit. We noticed the phone calls that were related to people struggling with sports betting, when sports betting stopped as a result of COVID, we started seeing an increase in people experiencing gambling problems from internet gambling and then the day trading. It was other activities that were similar to sports betting. Day trading and sports betting have a lot of similarities in terms of the preoccupation, the blinking lights, locking in those profits, et cetera. But the internet gambling was the accessibility that we talked about before. Anything you can do on a mobile device that can still give you that feeling of escape or action.
Well, just like this program talks about recovery from alcohol and substance abuse, we also talk about the distinct possibility of recovery when it comes to gambling addictions and other process addictions. So, Dan, we just have a couple of minutes left. Can you talk a little bit about the rebuilding, the growth, and the recovery phase so that people out there understand that you can recover from a gambling addiction?
Absolutely. And, you know, we believe that all paths lead to recovery. So the first thing is getting honest. It's at that vulnerability stage of admitting to a close loved one, someone you trust, that you have a problem, right? Finding someone who has your best interest in mind, whether it's a family member, a pastor, a close friend, and then starting to have an open, honest conversation with that individual, taking a good, hard look at maybe some of the harms that you've caused yourself or others. I always encourage people to seek counsel from outside sources. Get a gambling counselor in the state or the country in which you live. Look to attend a meeting. Jump on a virtual meeting at gamblersinrecovery.com. Check out that website. And then go through the path such that you're creating a new life where gambling no longer fits in.
You've been listening to Recovery Recharged with certified life and recovery coach Ellen Stewart, pushy broad from the Bronx. Don't miss your next opportunity to let me help you recharge your recovery Let go of your secrets and change the way you think, feel, and act. Right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle. Want to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer. Let us help you produce a professionally sounding radio show or podcast. Learn more at 1150KKNW.com. KKNW. Talk variety that's live and local.
Happy Monday. Eric Ryder here with you on KKNW. Time now for a quick look at our traffic. Southbound I-5 from North Gateway to Lake City Way is slow. Slowing south and stop and go Enchanted Parkway to the Fife area. Taking a look at 405 northbound, finding some slowing around Sunset. Aside from that, things seem to be moving right along at this hour on our major freeways. Stay tuned for Wisdom from the Wardrobe. It's a very stylish half hour talking about everything in the world of fashion. Stay tuned. Also stay tuned for the 425 show, highlighting the best in the East Side. That's coming up at 12:30.
This report is sponsored by UPSjobs.com.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. President Biden is soon holding a news conference in Brussels.